Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Steve, good to meet you, man.
Pleasure to have me on here. So this is really exciting.
Yeah, no, I'm excited too. So you're one of the names that's always, you know, look, I think we had MLS season tickets back from when it started. I mean, we were there for Ronaldo's first goal in MLS. And so your name has always come around circles that I've been involved in. My son coached at Cal State Bakersfield. You're from Bakersfield, right?
I was born in Bakersfield. My family, my parents were living in a little town called Tehachapi. So I think about 40 minutes from Bakersfield, and that was the bigger hospital that they can go to actually have me. So that's a connection with Bakersfield. But soon moved to Northern California, so I'm more of a Bay Area kid, Morgan Hill, California, to be exact. So right south of San Jose. So, but I have a lot of connections in Southern California. Born in Bakersfield and then Northern California. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were just saying off the air, we probably know a lot of the same people. And of course, Kevin Grimes coached you at Cal Berkeley, right?
That's right. Yeah. All 4 years at Berkeley, he recruited me, and good relationship with Coach Grimes. He was instrumental in my process of, you know, becoming a professional soccer player. And great guy. Great guy.
Yeah, he is living the life in Spain now.
That's right. He did it right. He has the plan. I think I need to get a hold of him to get that blueprint of how to get to Spain, you know?
Yeah. Dude, it's amazing. We went and visited last year. We went to the Gold Coast and visited some academies there. I wanted to see what was going on with, in Malaga. There was an academy, and then there was another one in Valencia. And then we went up and visited, Todd Bean, just outside Barcelona. Very and cool. where Kevin's living in that town, and it's like, oh dang, this is the life. This is amazing.
That's awesome. That's really great. Yeah, I actually have my my technical director. He's actually living in Spain, doing some work over there for connecting, you know, some different academies and that type of thing. So we're trying to extend our network and everything that we're doing here. And I'm sure we'll get into, you know, what we do.
Yeah, I do want to talk about what you're doing. You're in Wisconsin now, huh?
I'm in Wisconsin, not necessarily by choice, by marriage. So, okay. Love, right. I never thought I'd be over in this part of the country, but you know, it's really cool that it's afforded me many opportunities, and you know, just like anywhere in the world, soccer is a big deal. And so I'm kind of putting my footprint into this part of the country, and where we are working with a lot of great, talented young players who have aspirations to play high level college and college in general and professional soccer. So we've been able to create a nice program to develop these players and get them closer to their soccer dreams.
Yeah. How have you noticed? So now that you're involved, what club are you with in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So we're affiliated with SC Wave, and they are out of Milwaukee. We're in Green Bay. And the way that our kind of structure works is I have my soccer business called Purdy Performance. We specialize in small group trainings, individual trainings, really whatever we need to do to help the individual. And we especially specialize in technical training. So we get a lot of touches in from ball mastery, dribbling, pass and receiving, striking the ball properly. And really that's our foundation. And then on the other side of the business, we have our club side. So we are SC Wave Titletown, essentially a satellite of the SC Wave Milwaukee club. And we have going into this next year, we're gonna have a U11 through actually a U8 through U19 pathway on the boys side, which is really exciting because just a couple of years ago we had one team. So we've grown since then. So we like to hit it from the individual developmental side, and we like to have the team kind of environment to help them, you know, achieve whatever they want through that process. Yeah,
you know, as a coach, I guess I would call myself a technical junkie. the biomechanical pieces of how this works and how that goes. And if you can just tweak a player's movement, it's like if you can do this with your foot, a little bit more gear in there, and now try this and work with it here, and the technical pieces of the game. And I noticed today, at least on social media, it's very popular. It's the tack. Everybody wants to throw around the big, broad, not everybody, but there's so many coaches out there throwing the big, broad tactical pieces out there. You know, a few years ago, the buzzword was half spaces, and now it's, you know, and it was zone 14, and, you know, how to take advantage of this and that, and, you know, this formation versus that formation, and low block versus high block, and all of those things. And I always said, when I coached the coaches for the Federation, licensing coaches, I would tell coaches that, look, without technique, there are no tactics. You can't make a wall pass if you can't make a pass. I mean, we can talk tactics all day long, but if your players can't technically pull it off, and if your players aren't technical and comfortable with the ball at their feet, when I scouted, I always said that the number one thing, even now today, is can a player get out of tight spaces? Are they comfortable with pressure on them in tight spaces and not turn over the ball? So obviously, you know, as a player, you were a pretty technical player, and how did that come about? When did you realize that as a player you needed to work on it, and then how did your technique, and then how has that translated to you as a coach?
Yeah, great question. You know, and I totally agree with the tactical versus technical. I always say if you want to play any sort of tactic, yeah, you got to have the technical part down, or else how, you know, you're going to be, you know, if you don't have the technical part down, then you're probably going to have to be forced to play a certain style of play that's a little bit more direct, you know, that type of thing. But yeah, you know, as a young soccer player, I aspired to play, you know, professional soccer. And I really aspired to play in Europe. You know, I really was just, I fell in love with the way that the European soccer style play was played. And I knew I had to be technical, you know, I knew I had to be able to touch the ball a certain way and, you know how to possess the ball and just have all those tools. And so that was really probably the foundation of my love for, you know, the technical part of the game. And you know, that goes with the style of soccer that the Europeans play. As a result, I was able to make it, you know, started my career in the second Bundesliga in Germany with 1860 Munich. And being part of that process and seeing how even at that moment in my career, I still wasn't at the level I needed to be at. I was like, oh man, I really need to work on this to survive here in Europe. If you fast forward to my retirement and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, eventually started the soccer business. And I really felt like there was a great need just for understanding, you know, the technical part of soccer. And I'm probably like you, I love the way things fit. I love the way, you know, the kind of the mechanics behind, you know, technical soccer and how you should receive the ball and you know, when you should be scanning and obviously all the different proper striking techniques. And I just fell in love with it. That's definitely been a foundation of how we train here at Pretty Performance. And it definitely is a part of the player profile that we have for our players, is for them to be very technical soccer players and understand how to use those tools, right? Those tools under pressure. And as a result, we have players who are now aspiring to play in Europe. We have some players over and overseas that are playing with some of the different academies over there. And we have some players that are playing in the professional academies here in Major League Soccer. And it's all, I think, because of the strong foundation that we've been able to work on from the technical side of things. And it's really just trying to give them everything they need at these younger ages to then make the decision on where they want to play when it's all said and done. So if you give them the technical foundation, I feel very strongly that you can choose now where you want to play versus be forced to play, you know, in a certain pathway, like a very direct style of soccer, you know, versus this, hey, I want to play in Coach Purdy, I want to play in Europe. Okay, well, let's give you the tools to do that.
Yeah, you know, people think I'm a bit of a jerk, especially on social media, because people complain about college soccer being direct or youth soccer being direct. And I will tell you that most of the college coaches that I know watch the European game, right? Mm-hmm. They watch the Premier League, they watch the Bundesliga, they follow what's going on. And I would say most coaches want to play like Barcelona or want to play like Real Madrid or whoever. But if you don't have the players that have the ability to do it, then you're going to play what you have to play to not lose, right? You're going to play whatever style you have to play. I played bunker in and direct with teams that I've had, because I knew that if we tried to play real soccer, we'd be down 5-0 by halftime.
That's right.
So we're going to sit
That's
in a
right.
low block bunker in and knock it direct and hope to get one or two free kicks.
That's
Maybe we'll
right.
score one. Maybe we'll win. Maybe we'll tie because we weren't very good. And I think that in youth soccer, I think a lot of that, I blame youth soccer for it. I mean, you can't take a college coach can't take an 18-year-old and magically make the kid better in 1 year, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, even 4 years if they've had, no foundation as a youth player. I think, not that we're set, but the ages up to age 13, 14 are foundational years that are setting the brain to operate in certain patterns in certain ways. And I think getting a hold of the kids younger is so important. So how is your system that you're using to teach players? How are you addressing players? Like at what ages are you trying to get players to do certain things
Yeah,
technically?
the developmental process, is very technical. At the younger ages, it's going to be fun, right? Very fun oriented. But I like to hack in the technical foundational work, and so we do that really when they start with us at 6 years old, 7 years old. I essentially dilute a little bit of the curriculum that we have in place. We keep it very simple, and we just make sure it's very fun. And so we're letting the kids enjoy and smile, but we're kind of hacking in the technical part, and it's been really, really great. It's been working out really nicely. As they get older, I would still say, at U11, it's very technically based still. We really want to hit that foundation at such a high level. We start to introduce more of what we call skill development, which, so more pressure, more defenders. So how do you use your tools under those situations, right? And now they start to get confidence in real soccer situations. At U13, they should, with our process, if they've been with our program for those years, they should have a really good technical foundation. You start to maybe offer a little bit more of that soccer IQ, tactical awareness, more of that style of play component on the big field. And then really the way I look at it is that U16, you're gonna have your technical foundation. You're either gonna have it, or it's gonna be tough to get it if you don't have it, and that will dictate a lot of times, what the pathway of the player, where they should, or the different options they're gonna have from a pathway standpoint. Now we're looking at, okay, how do we win games, right? How do we use our soccer IQ at a very high level? How technically are we aware of what's going on in the game, right? How are we playing in different spaces on the field? What roles do you offer the game? And now we're trying to get to like kind of that final product as a soccer player. And at that age, yeah, in Europe, you have the players who are becoming pros. They kind of have an idea at that age what the player can offer from a product standpoint. Lamine Yamal, perfect example. I mean, he's still super young, and he's developed that technical foundation since he was a young kid, through the academy system. So for me, that's like a critical age, 16, 17, 18, to really get my players to that. They're never a final product, but they kind of you kind of know what they have at those ages. And it's just like, okay, where are we gonna go with that? You're a candidate to play at the highest level. Maybe you're more of a candidate to play more of this pathway. But that's kind of in a nutshell the progression of how we kind of operate. And like I said, so far it's been really good. Our player that has trained here for the years that I've been in existence, the player profile usually is a very technical player, a very smart player, a versatile player, and so that's been pretty cool to kind of be a part of so far.
So let's back it up a little bit. A lot of the people that are listening have kids that are inspire that are aspiring to play in college. And then, I hope every kid that wants to play in college also wants to go on as high a level as they can, maybe play professionally. So how did your journey start? So you said you were in Morgan Hill. Is that where you played your youth soccer? Who'd you play for in Morgan Hill? What club?
Yeah, I started playing for a very small club called Orchard Valley. Probably is I know it's
I
not in
know
existence
Orchard
anymore.
Valley
Okay.
very well.
Yeah, we it was just really a group of parents that maybe got together, got the players together, and we just played our games, and we trained. Nothing super high level when it came to the coaches, until I probably reached around 14, 15. I then, maybe had a little bit more structure in the training, really strong motivation from my coach at that time. And I think that I was able to maybe believe a little bit more in playing at those higher levels, but I eventually, really what got me into more of the exposure was ODP. So ODP was a big deal back then. And that was really the pathway into the national team. And so I did well enough to make the district level team and did well enough to play the state level and then the regional level. And then I was able to get scouted and essentially made the national team at around 15 years old. So that was the big kind of milestone for me in my youth career. That got me just the exposure, the sense of belief, which was so big. And as a result, I was on the radar of the Cal Berkeleys and the Stanfords and the UCLAs. And I remember playing in State Cup for my team. I think at the time we changed our names to South San Jose Fusion. So same Orchard Valley, but we kind of just changed our names or our name. And that's where I got scouted by Cal Berkeley, Brad Agus, the assistant coach at the time. He approached me and he essentially said that they really wanted me for the program. So, that's a little bit of a journey there of how I got there.
My son is your age. He was playing for Los Gatos United.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So I know that you guys had played against each other
Yeah.
in, I guess it probably Northern California Premier League, maybe they called it back then. I don't remember what they called it.
Yeah, I
There's been
remember
so
playing
many
Los Gatos. I
iterations.
mean, Los Gatos was always a good club and always a challenging team to play. Yeah.
Yeah, so and then I was involved. I know we've run into each other before, but you were young and nobody knew where you would end up. Nobody's really paying attention. There's so many kids. But I was the goalkeeper coach for the state of California ODP during the time you were going through the ODP system. All those Morgan Hill days, right? All those Morgan
Yeah,
Hill.
the complex right there in Morgan Hill. A lot of great soccer days there, especially with the wind and no trees and the hot days. Yeah. No, I spent many hours. I was lucky. I'm from Morgan Hill, so all the ODP events that we had there, it was a 5-minute drive for me. Yeah.
Yeah, no, super easy. No, I can't tell you how many days we spent out there at that complex. That was the premier Northern California complex for years and years and years. But it's crazy because I look back at those days and realize honestly how easy it was to identify players and for college coaches too to identify players that, in California we had nine districts and those nine districts fed into the state team, and if you made the state team, you got in front of the regional coaches and the regional staff. If you made the regional team, virtually every college coach in the West, at least, and most of the college coaches in the country were going on that circuit. They would
That's
go
right.
to the four regions throughout the United States, and you got to get in front of almost every college coaches, and they knew you were pretty much the better kids in the state. It wasn't that expensive to play ODP back in those days. It wasn't a money grab per se. It did cost some money, but it was doable and it was scholarship if it needed to be. The state was pretty generous trying to figure it out. But the bottom line is, man, I find it so difficult for kids nowadays, Steve, to get the attention of college coaches because
Yeah.
it's so diverse, right? We've got eight different leagues, no exaggeration, with various initials, and
Yep.
then all coming under MLS Next is the top of the heap, and then ECNL below that, and then after that, it's easy for kids to get lost. And I would say back in the day, it was much harder for kids to get lost. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. That's why when I tell parents, especially that I went through the ODP system, they're like, "Oh, ODP," but it's just I tell them it's such a different landscape now versus before. ODP was the way; it was the pathway to play, for the top teams, or the state team and regional team, and especially the national team. That was the pathway to the national team. And once you got into that pool, that regional pool, especially, I mean, you're on a list. You're on a list of names where the college coaches are like, okay, I know that these are going to be the top players in the region, versus now, you have MLS Next, which I would say is becoming the premier, right? We have a lot of players that play MLS Next here through this program, with the affiliation with Wave. But out underneath that, ECNL, you have, and then you have like really just a strong horizontal parallel, I would say, EAL, NAL, all the other different acronyms, WSL Youth Soccer. It's crazy. Every year there's new ones that come out too. So there's always a new object. I was just going through the kind of the recruiting process and the tryout process these last couple of weeks. And there's always the shiny objects, the shiny new leagues that come out, the new badges. And it's very confusing to everyone, including myself. And I'm supposed to be the expert, from a parent standpoint. It's like, okay, what's this new thing? Well, to be honest, it's just kind of masking the old product that they had, and they're just trying to keep up with MLS Next, which is their competitors. or they want to, compete against ECNL. So this is what it is. And you're totally right. There's a dilution in the whole landscape. It's difficult to be scouted and probably difficult to scout as well. Because it's like, where are these kids? Where do I go?
Yeah, well, college coaches have a budget. I mean, obviously, they have a budget, and very few, maybe the Cal Berkeleys of the world, definitely the UCLAs of the world. They can hop on a plane and go to England next week, literally, if they hear that there's a player that's they need to go see, and they can do it. But most colleges can't do that. They've got maybe a $15,000 a year budget max. I've scouted on as little as $1,500 a year. And so what am I going to do? And when parents complain that, well, college coaches only go to MLS Next, yeah, because they can get a bunch of kids that they know are going to be of a certain level, semi-decent, all in one place, kind of been vetted by the system, those players, and they can spread their budget around. It's really hard to get out to all the different platforms all over the country, but and then you've got the budget of you're limited by your staff, right? I
That's right.
mean, we see the biggest colleges in the country who do have four staff members now with the new rules that can get out in the field. But frankly, many of the years that I coached, I was lucky to have a half of an assistant. So it was me. It was me. And how many things can I go to? And plus, I have a family, right?
That's
And
right.
so it's really, really difficult. So what's your advice to players that aren't playing in MLS Next or maybe ECNL? Like, how are you finding it difficult for them to get noticed, period?
Yeah, I think if you're not at the MLS next level, it is difficult, and it's one of the things that we're working on really strongly here at the business, in terms of creating some sort of structured plan or some sort of resource that we can give our parents to say, hey, this is how you're going to be seen. We pride ourselves on two different pillars when it comes to what we do here at Pretty Performance, and one is the developmental pathway. So let's develop, right? Let's make sure our training's good, and then the exposure pathway. Let's get you in front of the right eyes. And I'll be honest with some of those players that want to play, college soccer but aren't MLS next. It is difficult to say, hey, you should be going to that ID camp. You should be going to that. We should be going to this college showcase as a club. It's a little bit of just trying to find the biggest opportunity or the biggest net that we can just throw our players in, and you're essentially just making educated, I would say, guesses,
Yeah,
on what is the best
right.
pathway. But I know that if there were better ways, to get these players in front of the right eyes in whatever manner, and whatever connection, we're definitely, we're looking at trying to find that, and so that's
Yeah,
what
and I noticed because we take about 1,000 positional requests a year from college coaches across the country and literally at every level. And we've got a couple of kids that are in Indiana on the men's side, right? Got a girl just last week committed to Utah, Big 12. So I mean, I've had kids at Baylor. We've had kids at some of the biggest programs in the country, and so we talked to coaches at that level all the way on down to, this morning I was just talking, or yesterday I was just talking to a new coach at a junior college out in California. He's got a new program, so all the way from the top, all the way down to brand new programs. And without a doubt, at every level, coaches, I don't know that they really care where the player comes from, but if you're not playing in MLX, they want you to jump through a few more hoops, right? They want you to prove yourself. You might have to go to a couple of camps. They need to make sure that you can actually compete at their level. And I
That's
would say
right.
that's the only difference. But I've successfully seen players that are playing in, just the Southern California top competitive league, not just the regional league, right? We've got them in Northern California Premier Leagues and the Southern California Premier League. We've got those types of leagues all over the country. You've got your regional Premier Leagues that aren't ECNL and aren't MLS Next and aren't the major name brands. And if the player can play, it stands out. It's funny. People go, well, you can't really tell on film. Well, I sort of can. I've never seen Pele play in person, but when I see film of him, I can tell you he's a pretty good player.
That's
Right. And
right.
I've never seen Messi play in person, but I've seen a lot of film of him, and I'm going to tell you he's a really good player. So you can get a really good sense for how good a player is. What you don't know is how they're going to stand up against the faster speed and the stronger players. And for that, we often need to get them to a camp. So I find that tends to be the pathway is, coach, are you interested in this kid? Do you like this kid? Yes, I like, boy, they do show well on film, but boy, when am I going to be able to get to see them? Well, they play in this
Right.
local regional league. Well, we're not going to get out there.
Yeah.
Well, then they need to come to our camp. That's
That's right.
what they need to do. But at least at that point, Steve, the coach, when a player goes to the camp, that coach is going to actually be assessing that player, which is what we need, is a detailed assessment, somebody to pay attention to them and watch them. Because you know it's really hard. You said you just had tryouts for your club. It's hard for a coach to stand there on the field and assess 100 kids or 50
Yep.
kids or 60 kids. You can, the top stand out. Like you can see, oh, that kid just pulled off a bicycle
Yeah.
kick. That kid just
Yep.
did a diving header. Oh my God, look at the tackle on that kid. That kid's fast. Okay, he's in that category. What's next? So the top 10% is easy.
Yep.
The bottom 10% is easy. Like that kid can't walk and chew gum at the same time. It's like not gonna. And then it's the middle 80% though that, is he better than him? Is he number 22 on our roster or 18 on our roster? Is that kid number 18 on our roster? Do we cut that kid or do we keep that? It's that middle section that gets really hard to assess. So when kids go to camps and they're just kind of in the middle, maybe they could make the team. Maybe the coach does like them, but they kind of blend in with another 50, 60 kids. And so the kids don't get any feedback at all. And oftentimes the coaches are kind of paralyzed by, I don't know. I don't know.
And they
But
become
if they're watching that kid for you, right? If they've had the film and they think and they're paying attention to that kid, then they'll notice the little bits and pieces that that kid does different than somebody else.
That's
At least
right.
that's been my experience.
And I agree 100%. I think it's that middle tier of players who, you know, a lot of times are good enough to play at, you know, whatever level that they're aspiring to play at. But yeah, you get lost, you know. So how do you create a better kind of system, pathway, whatever you want to call it, to just get these players seen, right, by the right people, but with, you know, quality time, not just here's this player and good luck, you know, and maybe he had a tough day or maybe he just camouflaged with other players who are similar. You know, so I 100% agree with that assessment. And it's, yeah, how do we solve that? How do we solve that problem a little bit better? You know, it would.
Well, you and I will talk afterwards. That's kind of what
yes.
we do at SRUSA. But the parents that work with us kind of understand how that works. It just, look, it's always kind of like, if you're hiring at your business and you got a stack of 100 resumes that come in because you put out it on LinkedIn, right, that we're hiring and you know, all these resumes that come in. And then your best employee comes in and says, take a look at my cousin Vinny and just tell me what you think. And it's like, oh, really good resume. Oh, this is pretty good. You think he could work? Yeah. Okay, we'll bring him in for an interview. Also, also that person at least gets an interview, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. So I'm kind of curious, Steve. So when you, because you were playing, so were you were on the youth national team, right?
Yes. Yes.
You were getting playing time. You were actually playing for the youth national team, right?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was starting at around U15, U16. And I went all the way up, had a couple opportunities to play. Well, the Olympics was the big one. And I think I kind of, that's one of my regrets in my career is I didn't feel like I properly prepared for that camp for the Olympics in Beijing. Yeah, I believe it was Beijing. It was Beijing. And but I went all the way to the full men's national team when I was in Germany, playing for 1860 Munich and second Bundesliga. I was teammates with Greg Berhalter and Josh Wolf at the time. I was able to get called into the full men's U.S. national team, and we played against Switzerland. And so I've been able to kind of go through the whole pathway there from a national team sense, and then later decided to play for the El Salvador national team, which is where my mom was born, and I was able to get my passport. And I kind of made a tough decision because born and raised American, wanted to play for the U.S. national team at the highest levels, but I soon realized it was very hard to break into the national team.
That was my question.
Starter.
When did you realize that if you wanted to play for a national team, it was going to not be in the U.S.? When was that realization? What do you think the difference was? What do you think you were? Because when you're that close, man, you were so close.
Yeah.
You were so close. What do you think that difference was?
I mean, I think I was on track to playing with the U.S. national team. I think the decision that I made to come back and play in Major League Soccer was pivotal for my chances. You know, one of the moments I also feel a little bit of regret, you know, maybe trying to stay in Germany. I was very homesick. I made it easy for myself to say, hey, let's go back to America. But I think once that happened, Now the eyes, the U.S. national team eyes and scouts are looking at you a little bit different. It's just the way it was, and it's probably still the same way now. And then I had a bad injury in FC Dallas when I was with FC Dallas. Before the injury, the El Salvador national team, they were already contacting me. De Los Cobos was the coach at the time, and I said, no, I'm not that interested. I'm very much, focused on playing with the U.S. national team. But as I saw the interest kind of waver, and after the injury especially, I decided, okay, if I really want to have a presence playing for a national team, it probably makes sense to explore the El Salvador national team. And as a result, it did change my career, playing for the El Salvador national team, the experiences it provided, the exposure, the opportunity to play against some of the best players in the world, World Cup qualifiers, Gold Cups, all that stuff was quite amazing. And also the mere fact that I was a US born player that decided to play for El Salvador, the Salvadorians, they loved that. That was a big deal for them. Not to mention I was the tallest person in the country, essentially. I'm a tall guy. And so I was this unique kind of unicorn in front of the El Salvador fans' eyes. And I had a great experience just being loved, by my Salvadorian fans. So it was a tough decision. But that's essentially how it happened, but it was a great experience to play, for them. Well, more to that story,
Look.
but I would say for the most part, it was a great experience to play for the El Salvador national team.
Yeah, look, and like you said, getting to play in Gold Cups and getting to, playing World Cup qualifiers, I mean, that's the peak, that's the pinnacle. I hope every player aspires to want to do that.
Definitely.
What was okay, what let's go back a little bit into college. Was there any shock for you as a freshman going into college? Was there any were there some struggles that you had, even though you were playing for the U.S. youth national team?
I would say, it's a brand new environment, brand new atmosphere. You have these upperclassmen who are, they're showing that they're the ones that own the program, they own the team per se. So you have to come in as a new person, and the level of play was really good, and the physicality and the especially the aggressiveness, and the nature of how college soccer was played was difficult. There was a learning curve, but unfortunately, I was able to do well as a freshman, and Coach Grimes, he believed in me, and he let me, and I earned a starting spot as a freshman, which was very difficult to do, especially back on that team. And so I think there was a little bit of some fortune for me to just break in at such a young age that gave me more of a sense of belief. And I think that's such an important thing to have as a young player. And once I let the momentum kind of ride, I was able to just, my confidence was just really high, and I just kept it going, and then with the guidance that I had, which is essential, or was essential for my development in those stages, the guidance and coaching I had from Coach Grimes, allowed for me to understand how I can take my college career and turn that into a professional career. So I definitely feel I was fortunate with my circumstances, and I took advantage of every opportunity I had, but it was great to have a great coaching, a good program, in Berkeley.
Well, Grimes, he knew what he was doing. I mean, he had also played at that some of the highest levels in the country. I mean, he was a hell of a left back. Although he couldn't hit the ball with his left foot. I remember I was in a license with him one time, maybe one of my A licenses, and I'm in goal and he's playing left back, and he'd take that ball with his right foot on the outside of his right foot and bend it right down the line and just play it. Beautiful ball. And at some point, I laughed at him. I said, or just said something like, "You don't have a left foot." And he goes, "No, I've never been able to really play with my left." But he was a left back,
That's right.
and man, he could play a ball. And his knowledge of the game, and like you said, the technical pieces was, I mean, even at the college level, was he trying to help you guys with technique? Because he was a pretty technical player himself.
I think that, I mean, really, when I talk about just being fortunate to be put in that program with him as the coach, it was just essential for my development. And he was, very much aware of how important those aspects were. Our style of play at Berkeley at the time was maybe not so much like the prototypical, like just run and gun. It was, hey, how do we keep the ball? How do we, how do we possess the ball a little bit, versus just go? And I think, he put us in a nice position where he knew he had some talent who had opportunities to play pro, and he knew we had to play a certain style to get to showcase our ability with that style. And as a result, he was very successful in bringing college players through Berkeley and becoming professional soccer players, very successful. And I think that was also a part of being a part, being at that program is I see these upperclassmen getting opportunities to get drafted and play, in Major League Soccer. And well, I mean, every young player in any program wants to see that. They're like, there's an opportunity. It's the feel, you can feel it. You can feel that this is a possibility for you as a player. So he did a really good job. More, I see now more in retrospect, kind of how important that was versus the time. But yeah, he knew what he was doing, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was that one of your decisions? Who else was recruiting you
Yeah,
out of
I
high
had,
school?
Stanford, UC Santa Barbara, which I verbally committed to and rescinded. Didn't feel really good about that, but Berkeley kind of made sense, at that time. I had Notre Dame, and UConn, Santa Clara, a lot of good programs, and so it was really difficult to make the final decision. But after a weekend in Santa Barbara, I was like, this is where I want to be. This is the beach, and this is a beautiful
Yeah, just
area.
visit it, folks. If
Yeah,
you don't know what we're
exactly.
talking about, just go visit it. You'll know what he's talking
Yeah,
about.
it's just unbelievable over there, and the coaches were great, and they were successful. They got a lot of good results. But after the week after, I went to Berkeley, met with Coach Grimes, met the players, saw how they operated. Which, I mean, those are two different worlds, Berkeley and Santa Barbara. But I just saw that it just made sense, for me to go to that program. I mean, coach just showed me I think he instilled the sense of belief, and he showed me that, hey, this is a great next step in your, in your where you are as a soccer player, and that next step after this could be professional soccer. So I took that, I ran with it, and I put my trust in him, and I was lucky to be able to get through.
So you talked a little bit about how your experience in Germany, but so you ended up going well, pretty quickly, right? Right after pretty much right after college, you ended
That's
up
right.
going over to Germany. So how did they end up back in the day, by the way, when not a lot of Americans had gone overseas
That's right.
and been successful in Germany? I think while you were over there, I know my son had a trial at FC Cologne, and he just said, he was a goalkeeper, and he just said that he goes he got a trial with the under 23s when Podolski was there,
Oh,
and
nice.
he
Yeah.
said that the time that he knew he was in trouble was when they came out after, like at the end of training, and did crossing and finishing. And he says, "Dad, they head the ball harder than anybody I've ever seen kick a ball in my
No.
life. The ball was past me before I even saw it." So going into now from college to the level you were at in Germany, what was the culture shock there?
No, that was the biggest culture shock. I mean, showing up to Germany and seeing my teammates, and they just, I don't know, it was kind of an interesting feeling where, like, okay, these are supposed to be really good soccer players. These kind of, they look like normal guys. There's obviously some tall Germans and some strong Germans and that type of thing. But once we got onto the soccer field, it was very evident that soccer was in their blood. It's just the essence of who they are as individuals. They knew how to touch the ball very nicely. They were just very smart, so their soccer IQ was just unbelievable. It was just, I mean, it was a couple of steps ahead of, I think, where I was, at the time. I had an amazing trial, and actually I was really good in the air, so I was really really good at heading the ball. And I think that trial, I don't know what it was, but I won, I think, every single header. And there was also one training where it was a very two big goals pretty close, and it was just a lot of, like, crossing and finishing and just putting the ball in the mixer. And for whatever reason, I was just on that day, and I scored a bunch of goals, and I defended a bunch of, with headers and clearances and that type of thing. I think that's the reason I made that team, to be honest. And obviously I was able to do show well enough with everything else. But once I got the contract and I was in that environment, I mean, it was the biggest, strongest, I would say, culture shock from a soccer standpoint that I've experienced in my career. And it was a sink or swim type of deal. I had to survive to start, and soon I was able to catch along and start to integrate a little bit, and that really took me to a different level, from a soccer standpoint. It's really foundationally the reason, one of the big reasons why I approached and designed the business that I have now the way it is. I fell in love. I was always in love with the technical part of soccer, the style of play, the European style of play. And now, having experienced it, I was like, this is so important. I need to get younger players getting these type of trainings so that they have at all a possibility to play in Europe, or at the highest levels, So that experience, again, foundational in terms of just how I now operate, in my soccer business today.
So when you came back to the MLS, did the game seem slower in a way? How was that transition?
Yeah, unfortunately, when I came back to Major League Soccer, all the instruction that I had in Germany, all the high level training sessions that I had, on any given game day, I felt ready. I cannot say or articulate it in better words than just I felt ready. I knew what I had to do. I knew my role. I knew the organization of what we wanted to get done as a team. And so, I just felt like this amazing, like machine almost. And when I came back to Major League Soccer, I felt that there was a lack of that organization from a what style of play, right? What do you want from me, coach? What do you want from us? And that was a little bit of how I felt my experience was at Major League Soccer for the most part. And that's I think I maybe lost a little bit of confidence because I didn't have that direction, and I lost a little bit of sharpness because the training process was a little bit, not really consistent, so when I came back, I was on fire playing the best soccer of my life, and I think a couple injuries got to me, and coming back from the injuries, I kind of lost my a little bit of my old self, at least my European self. And it was a little bit tough, I think. I think Major League Soccer was going through a lot of, what style are we? Where are we with,
Right.
how we want to operate as a product, a bigger picture, Major League Soccer. And maybe I was a part of that process, unfortunately.
So you ended up in some of the, that you played your most of your games with up in Portland, right?
Yes. Yeah. The Timbers. Yep.
So how was that making that transition from USL to MLS?
After the injury, at Dallas, I had to figure out what I was going to do. So I decided that I needed to play. I needed to play. So decided to go with the Timbers. They were 1 year out of playing in Major League Soccer. So I knew this is a great kind of stepping stone back to just playing and getting back into that higher level. And I think that year was such an important year for me, just to get back to just who I knew I was as a soccer player, enjoying a little bit more. I think as a pro, sometimes you can fall into the trap of not enjoying the game, and you start to realize, like, wait a second, why am I playing? Right. And so that USL year allowed for me just to get back to my roots and my passion for soccer and what I call my expression as a soccer player. I was able to express myself as a soccer player the way I want to express myself. And hey, what comes with that is confidence. What comes with that is just a better sense of fulfillment. And that really got me back to where I was. And I was able to play with the Timbers, for their first couple of years in Major League Soccer. And that was a pivotal moment, I think, for me in my career, just to get back to, where I knew I needed to be as a soccer player. And then as a result, that's when I started to play with the El Salvador national team, and it all kind of just, collided at the same time.
We talk about the four pillars of the game: technical, tactical, physical, and mental. You've mentioned throughout this conversation things that indicate that you were struggling or hadn't refined the mental side of the game within yourself, right? That you mentioned confidence. I mean, nothing changed about you. You could still kick a soccer ball, right? It wasn't like you shrunk 3 inches and, lost 30 pounds of muscle. It wasn't your physical side changed, and it wasn't that your technical side changed, and it wasn't that you lost all of your knowledge that you had gained. You're talking about mental struggles of a player. And it's almost heartbreaking to me to hear some of the struggles that you went through. But then I look back and I've seen plenty of unbelievable players who just couldn't get past the mental side of the game, be it rejection or be it injury or be it, allowing the external influences of our coaches and the training staff or the way that we trained or the way we're treated by our teammates or how we're accepted or not accepted. And all of that is just the mental side of the game. And I want to say almost every pro I've ever talked to, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but they say that the mental side of the game is really 80 to 90% of why a player succeeds at a certain level, right? Once you have the technical and the tactical and the physical piece, and you know it's there. So talk a little bit about the mental side of the game and maybe what you've learned looking back with hindsight being 2020.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with, the other professional players that you talk to. The mindset becomes just, it really becomes a game changer. Are you going to survive? Are you not going to survive? I have so many of my old teammates who had high enough technical ability. They were good soccer players, right? But what set them apart in terms of making it or not making it was the mentality. It's the first big rejection that they maybe had as a pro. They couldn't handle it. They fizzled out. They let that be their reality. Or you have the ones that were resilient. They were not special by any means, but they kept working hard. They just focus on the next day or next training session or next play, and they're the ones that survived. And it really was what how they can endure from a mental standpoint. Part of the reason why mindset is such a big pillar in now what we teach here is because of the struggles that I went through. It's hard to measure. With numbers, it's hard to
Right.
quantify. These are intangibles that you don't
Right.
know until you're in the middle of it. It's like, why do I feel the way that I feel? And so yeah, we were trying to give these younger players now all the foundational principles necessary from a mindset standpoint, so they can go through that learning curve, not as college players or not as pros, but at the youth levels. And
Right.
now we're creating resilient soccer players that understand that when adverse moments come, that there's a way to get past it. Also, players understand that if their approach is very strong and they have a true vision for their future and they believe in themselves, that they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine, and there's going to be ebbs and flows. There's always ebbs and flows in anything, really. So as long as we're kind of going forward in the right direction, it's okay for those ebbs and flows to happen, And yeah, that's very much, came from my experiences personally on how I design things, and at the higher levels, yeah. If I would have had a stronger foundation, I think from a mindset standpoint, then maybe coming back to Major League Soccer, and maybe going through the injuries, and maybe not having a perfect training program or the perfect coach who communicated to me in the way that I wanted to be communicated, maybe I would have been able to get through those moments just a little bit better. Which maybe that little bit better would have allowed for me to just have a better career, a stronger career. And and I know I can say 100% that I struggled, and I know a lot of my teammates, some of the best players that play the game, they struggle
Right.
through mindset and the pressures that come through performing consistently. It is, I always tell my players and my families, mindset becomes more important at the higher levels, and or if you aspire to play at the higher levels.
Right.
That's when it becomes the game changer. If you're playing rec soccer and your mindset's poor and but you still are good, you're going to score your hat trick and it feel good. It's when you get challenged and you fail. That's when you got to know if you have a strong mindset or not. And so we're trying to do that here. And I recognize the importance of mindset. It really is. It becomes the top reason why players make it or don't make it, at those higher levels.
And you talk about the ebbs and the flows, and we always had a saying with our teams is don't let your highs get too high and your lows get too low. You're gonna win and you're gonna lose, you're gonna get injured, you're gonna struggle, you're gonna hurt, refs are gonna make bad calls, they're gonna make good calls, things will go your way, things won't go your way. If you can just keep that middle path and just keep going, and you're a good player, you'll come out on top more often than not.
The half the battle is not quitting. Like, it really is. I know it's like such a simple concept, but half the battle is not quitting. Just get to the next day. And it's like it seems
Yeah.
like something that's like okay, Coach Purdy. I've heard that many times. No, it's magic. It is gold. If you can just adopt that, you're gonna be fine. And then if you can just control the things that you can control, and just focus
Right.
on that, and not worry about like the results per se, but just focus on your process and your preparation. Those are gonna get you the long term results. And it's just like these very simple principles that you have to practice, and it's not easy to practice. It's easier said than done. But if you can and be consistent with it, you start to see the magic, happen in front of your eyes.
I love that you said practice because it really is. It's no different than juggling a ball or practicing your bend and your free kick and your outside of the foot bending and whatever technique you want to practice. And it's no different than studying game film and then practicing, oh, if he plays here, then I move there. I open up this way. And you practice. If you don't practice your mental skills, then they won't develop and they won't go. Tomorrow, I'm actually going to bring back on, I think for the fifth time, Dan Abrahams, who's one of the more famous sports psychologists in soccer,
That's awesome.
written multiple books on it. And when we talk about that, and just having tools in your tool belt, right? You don't always use a hammer for everything, and you don't always use a saw for everything, obviously. Each tool has its own purpose. But mentally, players need tools in their tool belt for when, you know, when you're not feeling well, right? Or when you notice, I mean, he talks a lot about ants, automatic negative thoughts.
Yeah.
And how to recognize an automatic negative thought, how to recognize an ant and then squash it. Because thoughts are just thoughts, and we can allow thoughts to control us, or we can control them. But first you have to recognize them. And that takes practice, and it takes practice in practice. You don't want to wait till the big finals to realize that you have doubts, and then it gets to you, but to allow yourself to recognize that. And it's just all part of being human, Steve, right?
Yeah. I think the cool thing about practicing mindset, you don't have to aspire to be a professional soccer player. You know, it's just such a great thing to focus on for any human being that has any aspiration, you know, but I couldn't agree more. You have to practice it. You have to treat it like you're juggling. You have to treat it like whatever it is that you do practice every single day, and you get those reps. It's like lifting weights. I tell my players, you know, if you want to have a strong mindset, then you got to get the reps in. If you want to have a strong bicep,
right,
you're going to have to put some weight on that thing and get the reps in every day, every week. And so let's do the same thing with how we think, you know, and then once you create those habits, and then you have an adverse moment, small or big, you almost have an automation on how to think through it and how to maybe learn from it and get past it, you know? So it is something that I have been exploring a lot. It was foundational with also the way that I started my business. I started with a lot of mindset training alongside technical training. So it was one of the two things that I just felt so passionate about, but I'm trying to explore even more and try to dive even deeper when it comes to, okay, what can I give my little guys? what foundational stuff can I give my little guys? And then as they progress into, you know, higher level, higher ages, how do I really make sure that they're thinking the right way and they can kind of get through those adverse moments, you know?
I love to hear that, man, that here you are, and a lot of people are going to listen to this and think, wow, you know, here's a guy who's been at Berkeley. At that time, you guys were, you know, definitely to multiple top 20s in the country, you know, and then you played professionally. You were in Germany and MLS, and here you are, this experienced coach now, and you've been around for a long time, but you're still practicing. You're still working. You're still digging deep. You're still trying to make yourself better. And I think that that's a lesson that players can take away. Coaches listening to this can take away. Parents listening to this take away can take away from that. As if somebody like you can understand that you still need to be learning and studying, then we all do.
I'm a big proponent in growth mindset. We've all heard the growth mindset. It's just like, we can always get better. You know, and I'm very competitive by nature, and I'm not where I want to be. I have my own vision of where I want to be, you know, with what I'm doing now, and I want to reach it as fast as possible. But the only way I can do that is I need to learn as fast as possible. So I'm going through that process myself, and, you know, I'm teaching my players all this stuff, and you know, I tell them, like, I go through the same process, guys. I'm doing the same thing as you guys on my own level, and I'm going to fail many times, and I got to just respond to it the right way. And, you know, you win or you fail. We like to use that phrase, you know, you win or you learn, not win or fail. You win or you learn. So, you know, what do you want to do there? They're both wins, you know, per se. They're both positive results per se. So, it's hard to adopt that mindset and to want to continue to grow through failure, but it's so essential. It really is. It is just essential for, I think, anyone that has any sort of motivation to just grow and succeed, you know.
So what's your main bit of advice? Do you want to pick maybe just a piece or two of, like, solid advice to the parents and kids and coaches listening to this who have kids that are aspiring to play, let's say professionally, because I hear that a lot. Like, I want to play professionally. I want to play at the highest level that there is. I want to play professionally, but you're 14 years old. I mean, you're 15 years old. You know, there's a lot of steps to go between here and there. So what, if you want to just pick a piece of advice or two that you say, this is the most important thing to think about.
There's so many things, but, you know, I'll go foundational on it, because I think it's so important, and it's a little cliche, but again, it's essential. If you have a dream to play at the highest level, you have to believe in it. You know, the person that believes and the person that does not believe, they're both correct. And you have to recognize what your dream is, and you have to believe in it, that it can happen, right? That offer is just this hope. And then you have to ask this very fundamental question: is it worth all the work? Is it worth all the sacrifice? Is it worth all the reps? Is it worth the day in, day out training necessary to get closer to that dream? Is it worth it? And if you can like solidify the first part of that, and then you can answer yes, it is worth it, then who's saying you can't make it? Like who?
Right.
You know? And I always go back to that foundational advice because that's where you start. Once you have those things down, yes, create a plan, right? Find someone who has done it before, who find someone who can guide you, instruct you, teach you, find the mentor, you know, get that support. Get that support from the people around you, or go search for them, you know. And now you're putting yourself in a position where this thing can happen, you know. And remember, there's always going to be people that say it won't happen. Those are the naysayers, the haters. Right? How are you going to respond to that? Is it about them or is it about you? Are you going to listen to those guys or are you going to listen to your inner voice and say, hey, I can do this? You know? And there's stories, so many success stories out there of players who make it and they probably shouldn't have made it. Where they
Right.
live, where they came from, their backgrounds, whatever it is, they shouldn't have made it and they made it. What happened there? Right? There's a sense of belief. There's a sense of this player really wanted it. You know? And so those are probably the where I would start. And you know, go achieve your goals. Don't regret anything. Don't regret anything. When you're in 10 years from now, don't look back and be like, I should have done more. Just don't regret it because that's the worst feeling I think anyone can ever have is regret. You
God,
know.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I can't tell you how many times I've said that to players. Look, if you shoot for the moon, if you shoot for Mars and you end up landing on the moon, you're still in a place that almost nobody's ever been to, and it's a good place for me. I mean, I remember my son, he was 10 years old, and he came in and told my wife and I want to play in England, because we were watching a Premier League was just starting to come on TV. Once a week they'd have a Premier League show, and I'd go and I'd buy him the Sunday paper. Or the Monday paper that had the games from all the weekends. I'd go down to the newsstand in Oakland and I'd buy it for him every week. And he really got into it. And I just like, somewhere in my head as a coach, I just thought, dude, you've got none of the genetics, man. You're cursed with my family's genetics and it's just never gonna happen. On the other hand, you know, I just allowed him to do anything that he wanted to do. It's like, okay, you wanna go train with that guy? Go train with that guy. You want more training? We'll do more training. You want to try out for that team? We'll try out for that team. And you know, you talk about the state team. He got cut from the state team every single year until his last year, and he fi finally made a state team in California. And it's like, it just keep fighting through it, and then doggone it, ends up playing in Europe. Ends up playing in England. Ends up playing Division One soccer, and almost nobody from our area was accomplishing that. And it, you know, yeah, he didn't land on Mars, but he landed on the moon, and it was a pretty good view from there. And it's resulted in, like, you know, here he is because he's your age, and he's still coaching for a living, and that's all he ever wanted to do was soccer. And so I think that's the other piece of advice that I would add to yours is you've got to have the passion for it. If you say you want to play professionally and you don't have the passion for it, you're only fooling yourself. I mean, if you're spending time with your video games and your girlfriend, or hanging out with your buddies and goofing around and spending more time at the skateboard park than you do with your soccer ball, and you know, if you're not eating the right things and you're not eating, sleeping, and drinking soccer, you're not going to make it professionally unless you're an athletic freak and phenom, which there are very, 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 one more very few of those that even exist in the world that don't have to try and they just make it because they're so athletically phenomenal.
100%.
You got to love it. You got to have a passion for it. It's got to be in your soul. And be honest with yourself if it's not, because that's okay too. It's okay to say, I like soccer, but I'm not in love with it. It's something I do, but it's not really my passion. It's okay
It's
to say
okay.
that.
I tell players that all the time. This is your future. It's about what you want. It's not about what I want for you. So that's why that process of understanding what your dream is and really wanting it is so important. Because once you make that decision, right, that's now the North Star. So now you just, I always tell this to my players too. Is your training or is your lifestyle a reflection of your long-term goal? If it is,
Yes.
fantastic. If it's not, if you're going out and you're doing all this other stuff and that's not a reflection of your long-term goal, then something's off there. What is off? Do you really want it? Right? Are you not educated enough on this concept? Like, what is it? There's something off, then we have to fix it, you know? But a lot of times it's just, what do you want? Not what does dad want? What does mom want? What do you want? And then make the decision to go get it, you know?
Yes, you don't have to tell. I always tell players, you don't have to tell me all about how important soccer is to you. Your actions will tell me. If I see you eating Cheetos and I see you staying up till 1 in the morning on your phone, I find out you're doing that. And if I, don't see you on the wall and you don't even bring a ball to training, my Lord, you don't even bring a ball. So if I'm 5 minutes late, that means you're not going to have a soccer ball to do anything with. I mean, a junkie has a ball with them. They sleep with it. My Lord, they're never without a ball. A junkie is never without a ball.
That's
And
right.
it's the junkies that are going to make it, the soccer junkies, right? The you become a ballmeister because you're just never without it, ever.
I tell my parents, because I tell them the reality. If you want to play professional soccer, you have to be obsessed. You have to be obsessed. And I always like to add the little the kind of the word before obsessed, a healthy obsession, just to make it okay. But you do have to be obsessed. And if you're not, then it's gonna be tough, especially if you want to play at those higher levels, you know. So, but that's what it takes, you know. It's a small percentage of individuals that are able to even have a chance to play at those higher levels. And their approach is also very small percentage of the population, their approach and how they live their lives, you know. So, but I wanted to touch point on, because I know your son's story was really, really awesome in terms of the timing of his opportunity. That's something too that I want people to understand, is timing is different for every single individual. There are players out there that their opportunity comes early. I was fortunate where I made the national team at 15, 14 years, 15 years old. But there are players out there that just keep going, they keep working, and their opportunity comes later. And so you have to just understand that not everyone has the same trajectory, not everyone has the same timing for their opportunities. And those who can be resilient through that idea and just keep putting that next foot forward, you know, again, a lot of times that moment is going to come. Just let yourself have the chance to even get to that moment. That's the piece of advice that I want to give, you know, to a lot of individuals out there. Just allow yourself to be successful and allow for the timing to play out. If you are
Yes.
resilient, oftentimes it comes, you know.
I love that, and I'm glad you pointed that out. I hadn't even thought about it because it is amazing that you two were playing. I know you played against each other. I know you
I'm
did,
sure of it.
and because you were at everything and all at the same time together, and then you had your chances a little bit earlier, and then he was probably not even 20 before he do it. And I always say it wasn't because he was athletically better, just because he worked harder and he sacrificed a lot. And like you said, he stuck with it. He wasn't going to give it up. Even after college, he didn't give it up till he went to Portland, actually. He had to be a couple years before you, but he went on a trial with them when they were in the USL, and they knocked it down from 8 goalkeepers down to three or four, and he was one of the three or four, and then he was one of the guys they let go. And then at that point, it was like, I don't know what else to do. I mean, I can keep grinding and trying it, or I can get into my coaching career. And that's what he chose to do. But by that time he was 25, 26, and it's at some point you realize that it's just not gonna happen. And then at that point it was the physical piece. At that point it was, yeah, he looks different. Stefan Fry was who you played with, was the guy that was always beating my son out at state ODP.
That's tough.
And
It's a tough one to, yeah. Stefan Fry is a special goalkeeper, that's for
well, I
sure.
remember when he came in, because he came in at, he must have moved in about like 14, 15, from Austria, I think he came in from,
Switzerland.
and Switzerland. And we noticed it immediately, like the buzz of our first coaching break was, because I saw Stefan immediately being the goalkeeper coach for the state. Everybody, I said, you got to see this kid. That this kid is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And you knew immediately he was different. And look, he's still playing. I mean, he's just another level. But yeah, some are early and some are late. But I love your advice to parents out there that, and to players especially, more than parents. Players, just keep at it, man. Don't give up until it's over. It's never over till it's over. When it's over, you'll know it, but it's never over until that moment. Keep fighting. And then many players do develop later, especially on the men's side, but on the women's side too, but especially on the men's side with guys. I graduated high school with guys, Steve, that were 5'9 at 18, and then I saw them at 23, 24, and all of a sudden they're 6'2" and look like they were bodybuilders.
That's
it's
right.
Like, holy I'm it's like that, you know, line from Billy Madison. It's like, I'm glad I treated you nice.
Yeah,
and I'm glad
right.
I made up with you. Holy crud. Yeah. What happened to you? Yeah. Guys can develop later.
That's why if you do focus on, like, you know, again, the technical part and just all the skill parts, it, you know, it doesn't matter what size you are, what physically you can offer the game, because at some point you're going to grow into your man body. And if you have the skill and the technical ability, then now you're going to be able to compete physically. And that's, hey, you're probably going to be better than the one that the player that just relied on the athletic talent their whole career. And now they're the ones not
right
able to succeed. And that, so there's a flip. There's a flip there a lot of times. And in my experience, it happens around, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, where the small technical player grows into their body. And now they're the ones who are superior on the field impactfully. And then the athletic player maybe doesn't have all the foundation they need. And now it's the opponent is able to figure them out. So, you know, that's also, you know, kind
you
of
know, my least favorite analogy or story, it's a fake story that coaches and parents give is that, hey, if Messi was born in America, he never would have been given a chance because he's too small. I just found a video that I posted on my X account this morning of Messi when he was like 6, 7, 8 years old playing. And it's like, oh no, he was different then. He knew. I mean, you could see he was doing things with the ball then that was just destroying and humiliating other kids. And I was saying, bullshit. Talent's talent, man. Yeah. And if you've got it, you've got it. And if you're technical, if you're uber technical, the college coaches aren't overlooking uber technical players. I think some parents think their kids are technical, but they're, you know, their kids are dribbling with their head down and they have no idea of the space around them and they can't utilize. I mean, you can be a Corver moves genius.
Right.
But if your head is down and you don't know what space to use your move into or the timing of it or the rhythm of it, or, you know, if you don't know any of that, then you only got one little piece
The
technical, tactical, physical, mental. Yes, you have to have the other pieces. But also when you see this film of Messi, he's quick. He's quick as heck. He's athletic as heck.
That's right.
And the way he contorts his body is super athletic, even if he's smaller. So I've never bought into the smaller players never get a chance. Well, the smaller players that aren't very technical and tactical and athletic, yes, they don't have a chance, but they didn't have a chance in any sport. I never bought into that. You know,
Messi would have been very successful if he grew up in America. The guy's
we can talk about the culture, right? He have been the same cultural type player, right? Would we have allowed him to play the way that he played in Argentina and grew up, or did the Argentinian culture, their insanity? I've never been in, and I've been in a bunch of different countries in South America, in Central America, in Europe, and I've never seen anything like Argentina.
But
with their passion for the game.
Yeah.
Would that have made a difference? Now that's a question I'm willing to entertain.
That's a theme that I often talk with my team about, my coaching staff and my technical director, is culture. How do you imprint the culture here? And it's such a fun topic to talk about, but it's also a challenging one because it's hard to replicate or to create that soccer culture that I think is so important for development for players. I mean, they're watching soccer every day, you know, they're breathing it, they're playing on the streets. You know, it's such a strong part of how they view the game. And here, I think in America, I do see a lot of just pay to play. Everything that I do soccer wise is organized. It's always, you know, I'm going into the facility here, you know, and this is where I get my training. Well, how about, you know, the rest of the time, what are you doing? You're not going to develop. I'm not going to develop you per se. You are going to develop yourself. You're going to get the reps in on your own.
I'm sorry, coach. What were you telling me? I wasn't quite listening. Yeah. What was that?
Exactly.
I'm sorry. What was that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No, it's so true, you know. But yeah, the culture piece is a big one to figure out, I think, here in America, whatever that is, you know.
Yeah. And we don't have it figured out yet, which is why it's still our fourth or fifth most popular sport, which is why we still struggle to beat Trinidad and Tobago or whatever small island country we still struggle with. And it's because culture, it's a culture thing. And look, it's better. I always tell people, look, I'm not, I talk about this, it's not, Even when you were growing up, man, it's bigger. It's better. It's
Yes, 100%.
better. I mean, well, I look at some of these MLS Next kids and I think, oh man, these kids, they got a shot. Some of these kids got a legitimate shot. And some of these girls, it's like, I mean, women's soccer is so much better than the way it was 30 years ago,
Yes.
25 years ago. It doesn't, I mean, some of the girls we were putting on the field for the national team were athletic, but some of them weren't that athletic. They didn't
Yeah.
really look like soccer players. And when I watch the Women's World Cup now, when I see some of these women playing, it's like, holy crud, have we come a long
Yeah.
way nationally and internationally. If you watch Spain from 25 years ago, the women, or England, it's like, oh crud, they're awful. They're truly awful. And now
Yeah.
you're going, holy crud, this is much better.
No,
So men's and the women's side, but it's getting better, Steve, and it's getting bigger, but we're still, I don't know, a
we're still
generation
a
or
couple steps
two,
away.
three
Yeah,
away.
I agree. Yeah, there's Major League Soccer is big, and there's a lot more energy around the game of soccer. The World Cup is coming next year, which I think will be pivotal, because I
It
know back in
will.
94 that was a pivotal moment in my life in terms of my
Yep.
love for soccer and being able to watch a couple games there at Stanford Stadium in Northern California. But
Yeah.
we've grown, but we're a couple steps still underneath, I think, where we need to be to become a powerhouse, soccer nation. I'm trying to put my part in. I'm trying to put my little part in to help
That's
push
what
in
it
the right
is,
direction.
Steve. Look,
Yeah. Yeah.
when you were growing up, I don't know who your coaches were, but they didn't have your experience,
Yeah. I tell my
right?
players,
So,
I wish I would have had what I have here. I wish I would have, oh my, I would have just fell in love, and I would have been a much, much better soccer player, but yeah, it was just whatever you had in front of you kind of went with
and that's
it.
what it is. And it's not a joke, but I tell a joke, you know, that, you know, look, my son's grandfather would rather have watched underwater basket weaving than watch soccer, and knew nothing about soccer and didn't care. It was that generation that was born in the 20s and the 30s. It's a foreign sport. That's it.
Yeah.
So unless you were a foreigner from a foreign country coming into the United States, you knew nothing about it and you cared nothing about it. And now I'm a grandfather, and so my grandson's going to have a granddad that this is all I care about. This is it.
That's awesome.
And
That's awesome.
that's a generational thing, right? And so by the time you're a grandfather, and by the time your kids are grandfathers, a couple more generations away,
Yeah.
I do think it will has a legitimate shot at being the number one sport in the country.
Sure. No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, we're making those steps in the right direction. That's for sure. It's just, yeah, we gotta keep moving along. And I think the success that we have with the national team is important, and the success of Major League Soccer is going to be important. And then, how do we get this developmental kind of situation a little more consistent, I think, across the nation? But we're getting there. We're a young country. We're a hungry country. We want to be great. We want to be the best. So it's going to emerge at some point, I think.
I agree. Well, I think that's a good positive note for us to wrap it up on. So, Steve, if anybody has questions for you, and I know you've got stuff going on there in Wisconsin, but how do people get a hold of you? How do they follow you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
www.prettyperformance.com is going to be our main website that we use. The Pretty Performance training Instagram tag would be a good one also to kind of see what's going on there. We're trying to put more effort into our Instagram so we can capture more of what we do. But you can see, some of the stuff that we kind of do. The players that have emerged from our programs are playing at, professional academies and colleges and all that type of thing. I would say those are two good starting points there, to kind of see what we're about. And they can reach out to me personally through those forms too. And if they have questions, I'm gladly would love to respond and offer any sort of answer or advice that I have.
Great. So I'll tell you what. So everybody's listening to this in the bio of this episode, we'll have Steve's email address and we'll have Pretty Performance links and we'll have all that good stuff for you. Hey, Steve, thanks for coming on again. And maybe before the World Cup comes on, we'll do a World Cup primer or something, and or maybe we'll talk about I don't know. Maybe we'll have to think about what we want to put together, but maybe we can put together even a live stream. Maybe we want to talk and watch the game together or something. We'll figure it
I would
out.
love it. Yeah, I really enjoyed
Cool.
this. I know that the connection was kind of funny how this kind of full circle moment happened with being from Northern California and then me being in El Salvador to actually to get the connection there. But I really enjoyed
Crazy.
it. I really love the way that you view soccer. I think we have a lot of similarities in that perspective, and And we're both well, we're both fanatics about soccer. So I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, brother. Really appreciate it. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Steve Purdy. I wanted to tell you before we go, I want to talk about our new product called GapYearSoccer.com. So if you've got players that are looking to take a gap year, or even if they're in high school and they want to experience soccer over in Europe, we've got some partners that we've gone to, we've visited, we've vetted, and there's some outstanding programs that we've got available in Spain, in England, in Germany. We're working on other countries too, France. But right now we've got a couple great academies in Spain, England, Germany. Look, reasonably priced, cheaper than you might think. There's some academies out there charging $80,000 a year for a gap year program. It's not that, you know, for a fraction of that price, we've got some really good partners out there. So look, the easiest thing for us to do is to get on the phone with you and see what fits you best. So go to gapyearsoccer.com. We can have a conversation with you. One of our staff members, happy to get on the phone, can ask you about what you're looking for, kind of do an assessment of your player and figure out what academy might fit them best for their gap year or for their time during high school experience to go visit soccer in Europe. Look, I've always told families that we have limited resources here in the United States, and it's not what it is in Europe. If you really want to experience soccer at the highest levels, Europe is where it's at. So go to gapyearsoccer.com, fill out an application. One of our staff will be in touch with you very shortly. That's gapyearsoccer.com.